on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. This is our Wednesday, May 13th, 2026 edition of Invest Talk, and I'm excited for today's show. It's going to be a good one. We're going to do our best to help you become a better investor, answer your finance and investment questions, bring you some topics that are important or we think are important to you. But most importantly, like I said, it's just about you and your journey. That's what the show is about, and a lot to talk about during this hour. And in just a bit, we'll talk about today's market performance and run down the show topics as usual. But first, let's tackle this first caller question now.
I had a question on GLNG. I've seen multiple reports and some really like it and some not so much. It's done well lately. It's an LNG stock with storage and export. That was my question. This is John from Fresno. Thank you.
Okay. Golar LNG owns and operates liquefied natural gas carriers, floating storage, and regasification units. So not the terminals, but the ships that actually you load the LNG onto and take it to its destination. As you would imagine, their business as of late is doing pretty well. But what's interesting is that profits are actually on decline. Why is that? They made $4.38 in 2022, then down to $1.57, then $1.35, then $1.33 last year. This year, only supposed to make $0.81, then $0.78 next year. So where's the beef? Why is their business struggling for profitability when revenue growth is still pretty good? And I think it just comes down to the business. It's a relatively poor business, low profitability. A decent amount of debt in their balance sheet, about $2 billion, $2.5 billion in debt. Negative free cash flow, even in this environment, with the demand for LNG skyrocketing. So where's the beef here? Now, the chart is good, but is that more sentiment than anything else? I think so. That's what it's telling me. So if you want to make this a momentum play, sure. A bet on hostilities in Iran continuing, that's fine with me as well. That's your view. But this is not an investment. This is a story. It is a narrative. But it's not an investment. Not at least a good investment over the longer term. Because if I go zoom back out, and this is something you should do with almost any stock. Has the stock been generally going up or down? Now, as of late, it's been going up. But this peaked back in 2014 and has continued to be on a decline. And if you look at the shares outstanding continues to go up and to the right. 2003, 56 million shares outstanding. Now, 101 million shares outstanding. It's just a low profit business. I don't like low profit businesses. I like businesses that have good cash flow, good balance sheets, etc. So as a trade, yes. As an investment, no. It's important to delineate the two because you can be right in the short term, but wrong in the long term and vice versa. So you need to step back. What is your time horizon here? What type of investor are you? Are you a trader or are you an investor? Now, we have a great show for you today. We talked about the 2026 gold price forecast yesterday. We looked into the safe haven, whether it's a safe haven or a victim rate or a victim of rate uncertainty, excuse me. And we also answered a listener question on Wingstop, ticker W-I-N-G. If you missed that, go check it out. The best way to never miss a show is to follow Invest Talk wherever you get your podcasts. So that was yesterday. But today, in the next 45 minutes or so, we're going to cover a lot, mainly our main focus point, which is that Goldman Sachs is shifting its rate forecast. Are they right? And they're not the only major Wall Street bank doing this. What is the path forward for Fed policy? The assumption has been Kevin Warsh coming in and they're going to lower rates. And that certainly can be possible, but we're going to dig into that a little bit more. Is that true? Are we actually going to get rate hikes before we get rate cuts? We have other topics on the docket as well. Talk about AI and the economy, the fact that it's distorting the economy in many ways. What does that ultimately mean for near-term profits, near-term opportunities in the market? But also, what does it mean medium to long-term as well? And then how are businesses thinking about AI in their workforce? It's usually two questions that need to be answered. Do you lay off workers, or do you actually just have them do more and become more productive? What you're seeing is more often than not, it's actually the latter. And then if we have time, we'll talk about why $100 oil is no longer a breaking point for the market and what level that might be at. Then we have voice bank calls. One is on Mercado Libre, MELI, as well as Schwab. Schwab's U.S. Dividend Equity ETF, SCHD. And of course, we have questions that came in via the comments section over on the Invest Talk YouTube channel as well. But we're going to head to a break. And most importantly, will always be your live questions. So don't hesitate to reach out and leave your message on the Invest Talk voice bank. Or if you're listening via the live stream on our website or possibly on AM 1220 in the Bay Area, you can call right now at 888-99-CHART. Hang on, because I'll talk about today's market activity in the next segment.
Your questions are free. The answers are unbiased. Justin Klein is here now, ready to take your calls live. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Let's pivot and talk about today's markets. It was a nice little bounce back day after a modest sell-off yesterday. S&P up a little over 0.5%. NASDAQ bounced back the most, up 1.2% on the day, despite what was another worrisome inflation report. So yesterday we had CPI, but I always say what is more telling is PPI. What is PPI? Well, it's producer price index. CPI is consumer price index. And if you go look through history, PPI usually feeds through to CPI in about 2-3 months. Because if you're setting your prices, most businesses don't change their prices like that overnight. They see a durable trend in their costs, and then they eventually pass that through over, you know, numbers of weeks. And so core PPI, this is excluding food and energy, was up 1% month over month. That doesn't sound like a lot, but that was 0.3% above, the consensus was 0.3%. So much higher. March's data was revised up from 0.1% to 0.2%. Annualized, this is 5.2% month over month. Consensus was supposed to be 4.3%. So nearly one percentage point higher than the market was expecting. This is the highest since December of 2022. The broad PPI, which includes food and energy, up 1.4% month over month, double the 0.7% that was expected. March was also revised from 0.2 to 0.7 month over month, annualized 6%. Consensus was supposed to be 5%, so 1% more than the market was expecting. That, once again, the highest since December of 2022. So this is going to impact the CPI print for next month, the month after. The good news, final demand continues to be strong. This is clearly around AI, which we'll talk about a little bit later. Trade was up 2.7% month over month. Transportation and warehousing up 5% month over month. So demand is good, but inflation is even stronger. So this is why you saw the 10-year now over 5% yield. I think as that creeps higher, and especially if the, did I say 10-year? 30 years over 5. 10-year still around 4.5, but creeping higher. And this is, once again, probably the biggest risk in markets, which we'll talk to you a little bit later, which is what is the path for the Fed? What else did we see? 10-year yield hit the highest level since July of last year. There you go. Dollar index up 0.2%. Gold finished up 0.4. Silver up 4.4%. You're starting to see silver outperform gold. Both are strong, though. Bitcoin futures off 1.7%. WTI crude ended down 1.1% on optimism around the meeting between President Trump and President Xi in China over the weekend. So that was the market today. We're in option X, so I will reserve judgment on what's going on in the market probably until we get into next week, past the OPEX, and more news coming out of what's happening in China. Now, from time to time, we'll receive questions via web form from investtalk.com. Here's one that came in earlier. Robert says, is Bentley Systems, BSY, on the list of software companies that you consider a good opportunity right now? Interesting. BSY, software in general, is a space that there's going to be some massive losers. I think there's going to be a decent amount that muddle through. But then I think there are others that have a more diverse ecosystem around both software and hardware. I think those are the bigger winners. This is Bentley System Provisions, software solutions for infrastructure engineering, enable the work of civil, structural, geotechnical, plant engineering practitioners. So around industrial facilities. Take a look at earnings. Earnings expected to be $1.38 this year from $1.21 last year. Estimates are coming down, but let's make $1.56 next year. So based on forward-looking earnings, currently trading at $31 per share, this is at a more reasonable valuation than it's really been in a while. Now, this did go public in 2020? Back when it was only making 64 cents, and it's pretty much at that IPO price. But the trend is clearly lower, like most of these stocks. What worries me is that they are seeing downgrades in their earnings projections. Now, how much is that AI driven? That's a tougher question. They have a good balance sheet. Free cash flow is $491 million, but that is down recently. So if I look at their free cash flow per quarter, it was $187 million last quarter, which was pretty robust. But year over year, it is starting to decelerate. So I would keep this on my watch list. I wouldn't be buying this yet. The technicals remain pretty weak. I would dig into this a little bit further. You really have to understand what solution it is solving from a software perspective. And if you are comfortable with the fact that that will maintain, that AI won't disrupt it, then it could be opportunity. But I would also wait for the chart to firm up, for the market to confirm what your analysis comes out as. So right now, just watch it. Now listen, InvestTalk, now closing on 63 million downloads, thanks to you. Hang on, Richard from Santa Clarita has a question next.
'24/7, rain or shine, there's always value in the Invest Talk podcast. 888-99-CHART.
We're going to go connect with Richard in Santa Clarita, looking at Jacobs Solutions, correct?
Yes, that's correct. Okay. I was going to ask you, first of all, in this inflationary environment, this is a company that has had a pretty broad swing in terms of its stock price. It's really dropped recently. I mean, I think it's been as high as like 168, and I've seen it over the few years. It goes up and down, not huge swings, but I'm just wondering at this point, is this a good investment in this inflationary environment we're getting into?
Well, here's the issue, is that mainly they provide analytics, technical, and scientific consulting services. So the market is starting to say, or at least the message that I'm seeing on the chart, which is this is rolled over considerably. It peaked back in October at $165, $170 per share. Now we're at $107 per share. So down considerably from its 52-week high, even as earnings expectations continue to rise for this year and next year. But the signal is that AI can do a lot of these consulting services that will usurp what their need, really. And so I always say, I listen to the market. Now, is this at support? Yeah, it's at the support from March of last year. Liberation Day lows. But the market's at new highs, so look at the relative strength here. It's pretty bad. So you would have to be very confident that their consulting services are still needed in the era of AI. Not just for the next year or 2 years, because that's what you're going to see a lot, is that these companies are fine for this year. They're fine for next year. But as more and more companies and institutions in general, I'm talking maybe government as well, start to implement AI into their practice, well, maybe that can replace a lot of what these knowledge-based workers do, knowledge companies do, like a consulting firm. So that's the signal I'm getting. You have to really understand what they do and say, there's no way that AI can do this. Right now, the market is telling you that, yes, AI can do the vast majority of what they do. And in 3 years, 5 years, 10 years time, they're going to lose the majority of their business. And that's why this is in decline. Do you have a deep understanding of Jacobs?
No, not a deep understanding.
Yeah. So that's what you would have to have for me to be confident in this, that you want to fade the narrative that the market is pricing in here. The narrative is this is a business that does not have staying power in the world of AI.
All right, great. Thank you very much.
No problem. Thanks for the call. And this is it's going to become very difficult for the average investor to navigate the landmines. There's going to be so much disruption. Just think of the internet in the late 90s and how many businesses it disrupted. Businesses like, I don't know, the Yellow Pages, landline phones. I can go on and on of the businesses that were alive and consistent and doing well throughout most of the 90s and even through the year 2000. But as time went on and the internet kind of proliferated throughout every industry, suddenly those businesses died. They disappeared. And that's going to happen in the age of AI as well. Now let's pivot back to the InvestStock Voice Bank. You know the number, 888-99-CHART.
Good afternoon, Justin or Luke. Chris from New York. I want to get your thoughts on ticker MELI, Mercado Libre, ticker MELI. About 2% of my portfolio, down about 15%. They recently had earnings. I wanted to see if you guys would be a buy, sell, or hold, or if I should be cost averaging down. Looking forward to your answer on the podcast. Thank you. Bye.
All right, looking at Mercado Libre, MELI, supposed to earn $58.50 next year, up 44%, earnings up 3% this year to $40.63, but it's a $1,500 stock. So if you go based on this year's earnings, it's about 40 times. Next year's earnings, it's closer to 30 times. It's an either way you slice it, it's an expensive stock. Now, what do they do? This is out of Brazil, if I remember correctly. And they're kind of like the Amazon of Brazil. They have e-commerce platform, financial technology, logistics, internet advertising business. Revenue growth is slowing, but the issue, once again, like a lot in this market, is that you have a downtrend. And this downtrend is not something I would get in front of. I would want to see some strength. You have new 52-week lows this week. You do have a high spike in volume. That could be a signal that maybe there's capitulation, but I'm not buying it quite yet. Still pretty expensive. Multiples are contracting in this market. And so I would pass on MELI. Now, the next Invest Talk, we'll look into the story. U.S. dollar outlook 2026, strength, weakness, and what's driving it. That's tomorrow. But for now, I'm Justin Klein. We're ready to take your calls anytime at 888-99-CHART.
When you tell your friends about Invest Talk and they ask you why you listen, let them know there are many reasons, and one is parallel investing from KPP Financial and InvestTalk host Justin Klein. Parallel investing means Justin invests right alongside KPP Financial clients. He makes the same trade for KPP Financial on the same day, at the same price, and the same percentages as KPP clients. There's no front running and no special treatment. In this way, Justin and KPP Financial share the same risks and the same potential for success. Parallel investing aligns the interests of Justin and KPP Financial with those of his clients. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero are ready to answer your questions about parallel investing. And you can learn more anytime at investtalk.com. 24/7, rain or shine, there's always value in the InvestTalk podcast. 888-99-CHART.
Our main focus point today is about Goldman Sachs and other major investment banks changing their rates, Fed rate forecast. Mainly, it's about steady for longer, shall we say? Now, for most of this year, the expectation was when Kevin Warsh comes on board, starting next month, starting in June, he will advocate for rate cuts like President Trump wants. There's always been the question of, can he sell that to the board? Remember, this is a board. It's not one man or woman. It's about 12 people that vote. And last meeting, there was an 8-4 split. They were talking about, the statement had an easing bias, but a handful said, no, we don't think we should have an easing bias. It should be more neutral because of the inflation outlook. And since then, like I said, big banks like Bank of America, Global Research, as well as Goldman Sachs, they're starting to say, no, the Fed will remain on hold for the rest of the year and then maybe cut rates. B of A says next summer. Goldman says in December of this year and then March of next year, which is pushed back from their September rate cut forecast prior. And once again, they're not the only Wall Street bank that's saying this. Why? Because the data. That is simple. We just talked about the inflation, both CPI yesterday, PPI today, but also Friday's employment report. It was a bit better than expected. Unemployment rate was steady at 4.3%. So the labor market is relatively okay. And then the inflation picture is getting hotter. So where is the impetus for major rate cuts? Now, Goldman is saying, well, they should, or actually it was B of A, said that cuts should be in play next summer. Think about that, over a year from now, when inflation is much closer to target, which does make a bit of sense. Maybe you get through this, get through a resolution of the war, the damage of all the infrastructure and the higher cost of all these inputs now across the economy. Maybe that wears off in a year, but that's a year from now. Very difficult to understand where the geopolitics will head between now and then. How supply chains will heal, if at all, between now and then. So to me, that's a giant shot in the dark. Now let's turn to markets. What are the markets saying? Because, usually, like with stock recommendations, upgrades and downgrades, usually these investment banks are actually late to the game. What does Trump say about the Fed? Always late, or Powell, always late, Powell, or something like that. Well, these investment banks are notoriously late about almost everything. They don't move the recommendation until the market's already moved. And guess what? The market is already pricing in. But there's about a third of 1% chance that there will be a rate hike or two between now and year end. There's only a 0.7% chance. This is what the market is pricing in, that there's only a 0.7% chance there will be a rate cut between now and year end. There's a 67.5% chance there will be no rate cut. They'll just keep it steady. And I could see that. I think that's still the most likely option. That makes sense because you're going to have a Fed chair that's going to have an easing bias, but the rest of the committee is most likely going to shift towards a more hawkish stance as the year goes on, as these inflation figures continue to spiral to the upside. Question is, at what point does Kevin Warsh say, you know what? You're right. This inflation resurgence isn't going away. We must raise rates. And ultimately, this will have an impact on really across the economy, as well as, most importantly, markets. You're already seeing, as I said earlier, the 10-year at the highest level in, since September or July of last year, since last summer, call it. 30-year now over 5%. So if you own duration, I've warned about this, that you don't want to own a lot of duration in your bond portfolio. So it'll impact that, but it will also impact what? Housing market. Mortgage rates. Mortgage rates are priced off the 10-year. So you're already seeing a sell-off in housing stocks, for example. Why? Because, once again, real estate is reliant on these low interest rates. The current mortgage rate is at 30-year 6.54%. That's up from a recent low around 6%. So we're up already 0.5% in just a matter of, when was this? It's February? What was this low? I'm trying to pinpoint this. Yeah, February. It's material. It's real money, real higher cost of capital. And then the third is what most of us are maybe concerned about or wonder, which is equity valuations. Remember 2022 when you had that protracted downturn because the Fed was on a hiking cycle and the market rolled over before the Fed actually raised rates? And it was mainly in the NASDAQ. NASDAQ was down 33% at that time. The market hasn't reacted. Now, part of it is earnings are going up for a lot of these big tech names. So right now, the market is ignoring this higher cost of capital. But at some point, if you do see rates continue to move higher because, guess what? Inflation is now resurging. Well, that could shift the narrative. It could shift us into a more risk-off environment. And so as long as this drags on in the Middle East, that is a creeping possibility. Now let's head over to a YouTube comment question. Talk to Naveen says, great show, very informative. Could you please share your thoughts on Autodesk, ADSK? A quick follow-up. When you say free portfolio review, how does that work? Would like to know the steps for free portfolio review. Yeah, very super simple. You want to head to our website, click on the Get My Review, the portfolio review form, just fill that out. Then we will intake your latest statements or a spreadsheet of all of your positions. We put that into our system, run an analysis and a report. We schedule a video conference call, share my screen, go over the report, pros, cons, talk about goals, see if there's any way we can help. If not, no big deal. And overall, just give that analysis of where your portfolio sits in conjunction to the risks in the market, as well as, most importantly, your risk tolerance level. Are you above it? Are you below it? Are you at it? We'll look at all that. So that's that. But let's get into Autodesk ADSK, another one of those software names. Now, this is actually one of those software names I would be a little bit more bullish on. Yeah, it's in a downtrend. Its relative strength, though, is a bit better than the broader sector. And for everyone else out there, if you don't know what Autodesk does, they design and develop multimedia software products, mainly for product design. So if you're trying to mock up the design of a new product, no matter what that is, Autodesk is typically the go-to. It's computer-aided design. AutoCAD is their main piece of software. They have other ones as well. Big business, $48 billion market cap, pretty much no debt on its balance sheet, $2.4 billion in free cash flow, return on equity 40%. Free cash flow is at an all-time high. What are they doing with that cash flow? They are not paying a dividend, but are they buying back shares? They are doing that. Earnings for this year are supposed to be up 19% after being up 23% last year. So it's earning $14 next year, a $231 stock. So you're talking about a high teens multiple going forward with a clean balance sheet and I think a more defensible moat. If you are an engineer, you are trained on this software in school. It's kind of the go-to, it's the industry standard. It's going to take a long time for competitors to, I think, mock up, even with AI, a true competitor. And even then, it's going to have the same, you know, are the end users, are they going to want to switch, learn this whole new piece of software that is, you know, think about computer design. It can be complex. You want to go and learn a whole new interface? Probably not. So of the software names, this is up there with some of the, I think, the more defensible pieces of software. And I think their economic moat is real. So I've got a lot of calls on software names, and this would be my favorite of the bunch, not only because of the relative strength, but also the type of software that they produce. Let's go answer another fresh listener question now.
Hey, Justin and Luke. Matt from Minneapolis calling you guys. I just heard the other day Luke talking about gold and what it's doing or not doing, I guess that is. And if I understood that right, is gold kind of, I guess, in a neutral phase right now until maybe the war ends or gets closed up or the Fed does something in lowering rates or something like that? That was kind of how I understood his discussion on it. My concern is I currently own NEM Newmont and also GDX, which is a gold mining one that I believe you guys own. I loaded up on gold, I guess, when it was going great and things were good. I'm wondering, should I dump one of them completely? I'm thinking maybe NEM, even though it was good at one time, but right now just use the money for something else and maybe keep GDX. I was thinking if that'd be the thumbs up one. I know you guys own that in some of your portfolios, so that might be the better of the two. What are your thoughts on this move? Thank you. Look forward to hearing your information.
Now, we don't own either four of GDX or NEM for our clients. We own a lot of the names within GDX. So maybe we talk about GDX as a proxy for gold miners in general. We own, once again, a lot of the names within it. But what's happening now in golds and gold miners is just it's chopping sideways. The underlying demand is still very strong. Geopolitical uncertainty and the diversification of central bank balance sheets around the world is pushing away from treasuries, one of the reasons why you're seeing rates go up, and into harder assets, gold and silver. And so I think longer term, there's still the uptrend that will continue. Market got a bit overbought earlier in the year, and like most things, it takes some time for that sentiment to be burned off. And usually it burns off with a correction or a consolidation period, and that's what you're seeing right now. Silver's been attempting to break out recently, or has, you know, had a little bit of a breakout recently, which usually is a tell for the broader precious metals market. And so absolutely not. I would not be selling these names. It's just going through a consolidation period. If you can't stomach, it's just basically a choppy sideways pattern over what, 3 months now. That's not a big deal. That's normal. It's healthy. It's fresh. It still remains above all the major moving averages, which from a technical perspective, it's fine. The backdrop of, once again, a exploding deficit domestically, a geopolitical environment that is becoming even more contentious and complex. They're all the reasons why gold and silver rallied over the past 2 years considerably remains today. So absolutely, there's really no reason to sell it unless you are too overweight the particular sector. Doesn't sound like you are, but I would hold both Newmont and GDX. Now let's squeeze in one more quick question now.
I was calling in regards to ticker symbol RIO, Rio Tinto. I actually own 100 shares of it and was wondering, should I buy more? So just wanted to know what you guys thought about it. Thank you, and keep up the good work.
Looking at Rio Tinto, one of the largest mining companies in the world, about, what's the market cap? $184 billion. It's a lot. It's in a strong uptrend at a 52-week high at the close today. Earnings supposed to be $8.13 next year, $112 stock. So, you know, mid-teens multiple. The issue is that it doesn't sound expensive, but historically, mining stocks tend to trade at relatively low multiples. However, we're entering a new era where hard assets are more important. They're being valued more. Now, about half the revenue comes from iron ore. I don't love that as the core crux of their business or their profitability. But the other two, which would be aluminum and copper, aluminum is about 29% of the revenue, copper is 23%. So those I do like longer term. Now I would like a little bit more a pure play within the copper or aluminum space, but this is a good diversified play overall. So I like it. It's not my favorite within the commodity space, the natural resource space. But you can't argue with the momentum. You can't argue with the fact that, like I said, harder companies with harder assets are starting to be revalued higher in a world of geopolitical uncertainty. Would I buy more? It depends on my exposure to natural resources and to Rio altogether. Overall, I'm bullish on this long term. This is InvestTalk. I'm Justin Klein. We have one goal here each and every weekday, is to help you achieve your own version of financial freedom. Let's get your questions in right now at 888-99-CHART.
There are a few things that make KPP Financial special. One of them is parallel investing. This means they invest right alongside their clients. Here's how it works. When KPP Financial makes a trade for their clients, Justin Klein makes the same trade for himself and KPP. On the same day, at the same price, and same percentage. No front running, no special treatment. Learn more about parallel investing at investtalk.com.
Hello, just I have a question. This is Steve from Atlanta. Can you please let me know what do you think about SCHD, Schwab High Dividend, just to check if this would be a good way of have a small side of my portfolio on dividends. Thank you.
Looking at SCHD, this is a very popular ETF, especially if you're a Schwab customer. Obviously, we custody at Schwab, now Fidelity as well. But I always say this, and this is interesting that the caller asks, it's a Schwab high dividend ETF. Well, it's not. It's actually just the U.S. dividend equity ETF. And there's a couple issues I have with it. Is this to the U.S.? And there's a lot of value abroad as well. So I would want to make sure I have foreign exposure. So if you're just trying to gain domestic dividend exposure, this is a decent way to do it. Now, it is dividend investing in general is just value investing. And you can see if you go look at Morningstar, it's deep value, kind of a blend between mid and large cap. If you look at its sector allocation, it's all about 18% consumer defensive, 19%, which is that's an issue because a lot of those names are struggling in inflationary environments. Healthcare is also 18%, another area that doesn't do well in inflationary environments. You want to be overweight things like basic materials. This is 0%. You want to be overweight things like financial services, which is 9%, but that's the category and the value sector is 19%. You want to be overweight industrials, which is 7%. It's fairly low, below the S&P and below the category at 12%. So that's my issue here is I don't like the sector allocation. You're not getting really great, a great hedge against the inflationary environment. The good news is it is performing well recently. That's kind of the positive. But overall, you know, last year was only up 4%. It was in the 90th percentile. It did horribly last year. So yes, it's bounced back this year. It's doing great, but it's only been 3 months. And then if you zoom out to like the 5 year, returns 8.6%, which is once again in the bottom quartile, 81 percentile, meaning only 19 funds in this category, which would be large cap value, are outperforming over that time period. That's it. Only 19% of funds are doing worse than this. Excuse me. There we go. That's a better way to put it. Only 19% of funds over a 5 year period are doing worse than this within the category. It means 81% of the funds within this category, large cap value, are doing better. And so, as I always say, and this is something we're gonna hit on our next webinar. It's coming up at the end of June. We're gonna talk about income, a lot of these income funds, dividend funds, is that you don't want to just focus on the name. You want to focus on the structure. How is it allocated? Is that really how you want to allocate your portfolio? And how does that mix with the rest of your portfolio as well? So, you know, I'm kind of so-hum on this. Not the best, not the worst, but certainly not great. Yeah, it has a low expense ratio, but once again, I'd rather pay a little bit more for real performance. Because like I said, even with that low cost, the five-year return is poor. Thank you all for tuning in. I'm Justin Klein. Reminding you about KPP Financial's parallel investing. When we make a trade for our clients, make the same trade for ourselves, same day, same price, Same percentage, no front running, no special treatment. We invest right alongside our clients. We share the same risk and potential for success. You can learn more by heading over to investtalk.com. Please tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. Be sure to rate and review on iTunes as well. Good news, we have posted our latest wealth webinar to our YouTube channel. The topic is about inflation, and you can watch it for free by heading over to the InvestTalk YouTube channel. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.